I didn't know how to talk to adults in middle school.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I wasn't taught to talk to adults in middle, like, in my family, I don't think. But, like, my parents didn't have friends that would come over all the time. And right. So, like, I just thought adults were kind of weird.
Yeah. But sometimes adults show up at your house at 9 o'clock at night
with,
microphones to talk about a children's book with no children present. Yeah. So what I'm going to do is...
Those are the kind of adults my mom told me to stay away from.
Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I'm your host, Phil Gonzalez, and this week, let's get down in the dirt. Not me personally. I don't like to touch dirt. I don't like to be in dirty situations or be around things like plants and grass or the outside. But fortunately, I do know people who have been outside and know about plants. And the best thing is that they live not too far from me. Now, I'm not going to give away where exactly they live in case someone out there knows where I live and then you can find them. This is all really boring and just a long way of saying that this week's book is called The Berenstain Bears Grow It. Mother Nature has such a green thumb. It's the longest title in Berenstain Bears book history, and it is not a story per se. It is an instruction manual for children on how to grow in any case, I don't know anything about growing plants, and I wasn't even sure if the stuff in this book was even going to work. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show my friends, and now yours, my neighbors. This is the stupidest thing I've ever said. Aaron and Melanie. And I didn't do that in any order other than alphabetical. And like left to right, like you guys are.
My mom gave me two A's in my first name so that I'd always be
at the beginning of the alphabet. Right.
I'm not messing around.
Unless like a kid came in, like a kid moved into your neighborhood named Aardvark.
Aaron Aardvark. Damn it.
Aardvark.
Aaron Arnold. Dang.
Oh boy. So hi guys.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
This is, in case you and I aren't familiar with my show, I discuss the Berenstain Bears books, and I've been doing it for 3 years. I think that may have been the first thing I ever told you guys when I first met you.
I think it was.
Yeah.
I was pretty impressed.
Yeah, I was pretty impressed, and I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. He's probably done like 3 or 4 of those.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, no, he's done like 2 years. This is amazing.
This is a thing.
Before we dive into the book, my question is that I always try to put to people is, do you guys have any history with the Berenstain Bears? Did you ever read the Berenstain Bears at all? Was this something you were at all like knowledgeable of?
I definitely read the Berenstain Bears growing up. That and like Mercer Meyer.
Yeah, he's like literally direct competition.
Really?
With the Bears. Little Critter series.
They always
Mike
have like a moral.
Mike Berenstain has brought them up in our big like talk. Because like he was like the Little Critter series always kind of running, kind of like tagging along behind Berenstain Bears, like kind of doing what they do. Mm. Always trying to do what they do.
Do like organizers always put them on opposite sides of trade shows?
So they don't fight.
So make scenes.
And if you notice, in every book, the little critter kills a bear. It's just one of those. It's just a little like jab at each other. And Aaron, did you ever read a Berenstain Bears book in your life?
Yeah, we definitely had them growing up. And like, I the two Berenstain Bears that I like, there's three of them that I remember a lot, which is like On Time.
Oh.
Which I thought was always hilarious. In the Box, whatever that one is.
Inside, Outside, Upside Down.
Still like one of my favorite books of all time.
You brought it up just the other day.
I liked your podcast on it too. And then the one that used to kind of like colored my childhood in some way in terms of like the nature and night was The Spooky Tree, I think it was called. Where I love that scene
of
them where they sneak out the window.
Yeah.
And then they go through all those different things. So those are like the shorter books, I think. But yeah, those definitely.
Yeah, those are the classics. What was interesting to me about this the series and this book in particular is so the Berenstain Bears are usually framed as like a very suburban type family, like they're very like
but they live in the country.
Typical
in the country.
But they live in the country. There's this sort of pseudo agrarian
like people around Stillwater and Marina and St. Croix.
Exactly, for our listeners, for our very very localized listeners, that makes total sense. Well, no, but it's that thing where it's this urban agrarian lifestyle. This, like, they live by the city, but they're definitely surrounded by nature, and they are very still connected to the earth.
I would like to say it perpetuates a fallacy in my daughter's mind of what is possible. She wants to live in that, like, urban agrarian.
Well, tell her setting. To move to
by the ocean, near the mountains, outside of a small town, but two blocks from your best friend.
Yes. This is, they basically live in Springfield, like the Simpsons. Like, mm-hmm. This is like, they are surrounded by everything. But there is definitely a, like, you can walk right outside their door and get your toes in the dirt. And we'll grow a legit garden. Like Mama has a legitimate garden outside her house. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not just a few, like, rows. No,
you can tell Mama knows what she's doing.
Right.
She's got a green thumb for sure.
And so what really interested me about this, about talking to you guys about it, is you guys have walked that line. Well, not walked that line. You guys have walked over that line and back and forth across that line. Having lived on and taken care of and had a farm. What is that?
Cared for a farm.
There's no lawyers listening to this.
No, but all of our farmer friends are going to listen and they're going to think we're frauds.
Well, so you told me you owned the biggest farm.
Yeah. Or nationally recognized.
Well, because you guys care for a farm. You know all about farming.
Everything.
Everything about farming.
Everything there is to know.
And that's and you've taken a lot of your expertise, a lot of your experience, and you have built a what is in this neighborhood like a mini farm in your backyard. Like, people walk by and they're like, there's the house at the farm. and to paint a picture in our listeners' minds, like, we live in the city, like, we live on a block, with an alley, and like, there on the corner is the grocery store. Oh, coming up the street, it's a guy on a bicycle with a trailer, picking rags and scraps out of the garbage. Like, it's like, we live in the city, and to see crops flourishing, like, is one of my, literally, and I don't know if I've ever said this, literally one of my favorite things about living here now is, like, passing by you guys' house and seeing, like.
So, have you ever seen the garden on
36?
Oh, yeah.
That one's beautiful, yeah. Too.
That one's amazing.
This is, like, right here next to my house.
Yeah.
It's, like, right there on the corner. Yeah. It's, like, look across the street. There's, like, a Subaru. And there's, like, you know.
A big garden.
Yeah, there's this just garden. I've never known that. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not anything that I'm familiar with. Mm-hmm. Like, growing food, tilling the earth, like, being confident enough to, like, build, like, minor infrastructure into your yard and being like, this will probably work and things will grow off of it. And then I'll be able to take things with my hand and eat them.
I definitely think it's like, I mean, it's been interesting for us because we knew, like, coming into the city, like, we picked this house largely. We liked the house itself and we liked the price range.
Yeah.
But it, like, also was very clear, like, oh, we like this neighborhood and there aren't that many houses in this neighborhood with yards that have sunlight.
Yeah.
And we're like, this is like a big open yard. We could do a lot of things. And so we definitely had that vision moving in of, like, we could grow a lot of food in this yard and we want to do that. It's like a huge part of our,
you know, family ritual
with the kids and everything. What I didn't anticipate quite as much was the neighborhood reaction to the garden, which has been fantastic. I mean, it's been a level of interaction with random strangers that at there's like a part of June where I was like, oh, this is a little too much.
Well, we took the fence down in the spring. We pulled the fence out and we're kind of undecided. I think we still are undecided about whether or not we'll put a new fence back up and what it will look like. But there was a conversation that was ongoing through the spring about the fence and whether or not it's a good thing. Like, we would like to have some privacy, you know, not just to be on show all the time. But then through the spring, we met so many more neighbors. Mm-hmm. People would ride by, stop, talk to us about how amazing the garden is, and then ride back in the direction they came.
Know,
like, this one guy rode his bike over just to say, thank you for having this garden, and then rode off. And I think what came up was just that this concept of the wall and like having a fence around your yard for privacy, and how that really cuts you off from interacting with people, and how us taking the fence down really opened up conversations with people.
Yeah, I think that it made me realize that like, hey, we were pretty accustomed to people from the city coming out to farms that we worked on or that cared for, and getting that sort of experience of people being like, oh, this is so amazing. Oh, this is so beautiful. I want to touch this, touch that. And I kind of got that as a sense of like people, you know, being out in nature and on big open expanses of fields, and there's, you know, couple thousand bed feet of carrots growing that they've never seen that scale before, or there's pumpkins that they get to harvest, all these things. But what had coming to this small scale in the city, I realized is that people are also just hungry for that touch of plant life, how things grow, how things nourish. Like it's so inbred in our being in some way, and we don't get that in life. And so I think there is something about just having a corner lot overflowing with pumpkin vines on the sidewalk.
Right.
That, like, it is. It's amazing. I love it too. I love walking by it. So
yeah.
I'm really, that's been a huge surprise to us, I think, how much the community has embraced it.
Well, plus you get rid of that fence and now you won't have that horrible ice.
Yeah, I know.
Exactly. Ice right there anymore.
I know.
That's my favorite thing.
Yeah, I know. Except now people just trip over that.
People are like, oh, what happened with that?
We like
it's
walk.
It's been like that. I think it got a little worse over the winter.
We watch all the time just walking and like looking their
look
head
at the
turned
garden
towards
then...
the garden for about 10, 15 no. feet, and then they step on the
sidewalk. Yeah, there is a portion of the sidewalk where a tree root has lifted the sidewalk up a good like 4
inches. Yeah.
Yeah, at this point. And yeah, it's a hazard. I'm not calling you guys out or anything.
No, but it's definitely a liability.
Yeah, it's a liability.
Yeah, for sure.
You guys are going to lose the farm.
We're going to lose the farm over it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to lose those 4 pumpkins that are growing.
Someone's going to be like... So anyway, the Berenstain Bears grow it. Mother Nature has such a green thumb by Stan and Jan Berenstain. Let's actually dive into this book, because I think what you guys just said was a perfect lead-in to this. And what makes the Bears world so different than a lot of kids' books world, because they are still very tied in with things like agriculture and that connection to the community. Meeting people, talking to people, being good neighbors, not hiding in your house like some of us do.
No, oh, I do that.
So I guess that's true. But why don't you guys tell us really quickly what happens in this book?
Mama Bear is carrying a flat of seedlings outside and encouraging brother and sister to come out and plant. And they had, you know, planned this, and brother and sister maybe forgot or made other plans and want to go play baseball and play with dolls.
So this is a common thing that you guys face.
It is.
Yeah. The kids. And it's kind of an interesting thing, because I think people with parents with kids in gardens, I think, you know, the Instagram feed might look one way, and the reality it looks a little different. Where the Instagram feed, we get the like one
just stand
beautiful
there and
picture
smile
that we get with
that tomato, please
playing with a hoe or like a tomato. But in general, Ruben, our youngest, actually really enjoys it in a sense of it. Addie like enjoys it from an artistic perspective of like, this is my take at least, that she loves that we have a garden. She's always a little skeptical every spring when they're small plants and just dirt, but then as it grows into a jungle, she's like, these, like, you can tell she loves it and is proud of it. Whereas Ruben, I think he's just more
we
of
should
a...
give a little context though. When Addie was born, we were working on farms, and so she kind of grew up for the first 8 years of her life on a farm. And her experience of that was very much like living where we work. And, you know, she'd wander outside after breakfast and just explore for hours on end, you know. And so for her, the gardening or the food and the farming, that kind of stuff is all tied up in her just sense of adventure and exploration. And when we worked at Minnesota Food Association and Big River Farms in Marine, she would just wander out and hang out with other farmers for the whole day, like all summer. So she would hang out with our 80-year-old Hmong friends and farmers from all walks of life from everywhere, different, you know, Guatemalan farmers and folks from Kenya, and I mean just like this whole diverse group of people, and would go out and help them weed, and they'd like give her watermelons and candy and treats. and then when she was done, she would just like wander off and make a fort in the woods and ice skate in a puddle in the spring, and you know, so that's kind of her world.
Yeah.
So the work of farming isn't really that interesting to her. She just likes the
pastoral.
Yeah, she likes the ambiance, right, of farming. It's grist for her creative mill.
Yeah.
Whereas Ruben is like just more technical in his personality. Mm-hmm. And so he's more interested in like how things grow and what the plants are called. And
Aaron, agree or disagree?
I agree.
All right.
Pretty good. Yeah. But like getting back to the book too, I think like it's clearly like kind of laid out as two different storylines, like a split screen essentially.
Yes. So this is the series is called The Berenstain Bears. It's the first time Do It books, and there's only four of them. Grow It, Draw It, Fly It, and Cook It.
Are they really meant to be kind of like how to books?
Well, it's Do It. The Do It books.
I know, but I mean, it's not really like how to.
It says, in our brand new Do It series, one good thing reading leads to another doing something fun.
I could see how it inspires.
It inspires, yeah. I don't know that it teaches necessarily.
And Draw It and Cook It and Fly It are just laden with descriptions on how to do things. Cook It is basically tells you how to make Mother's Day for your mother.
Oh, nice.
So
the split screen.
Yes.
You've got kind of a story narrative on top, mm-hmm, with a factual, we have actual factual bear.
Yes.
That kind of gives you the nuts and bolts of growing on the bottom panel of every page.
Mm-hmm.
And it is kind of confusing to know what order to read everything.
Right,
in.
Because the bottom panels do seem to comment on the action of the top panels.
Right.
At times. And other times they just sort of like flow along.
Independent.
So I have read these books a million times and still have trouble like knowing like when to skip down to the bottom.
Well, I like how like when they're going to the seed store, they start talking more about ecosystems.
Yeah.
You know, which is kind of interesting. And I think like, you know, like this is a little off subject perhaps, but like agroecology, which is like the science of taking the ecological science and applying it to agriculture. But the thing that's changed about it is that they've taken agriculture and ecology, and usually that was kind of applied to like what was happening in the field, and now they're broadening it into how it applies to the whole food system. How does the ecological system work in terms of where food moves and how it moves and how people interact with it?
Yeah.
And so I think I just saw that kind of quick parallel where they're like, let's go to the farm store and also let's talk about ecology.
Right.
Because these all things work together in interesting ways. So
no, I think it's a cool takeaway from this book. It just has a lot of information jammed into it.
For sure.
It does. And then, you know, the interesting thing that I realized while we're talking is because you had mentioned, oh, Mother Bear has this amazing garden. They don't actually ever show the garden,
you know,
because they're just planting it. It's springtime.
Yeah, but they don't.
It's like, what everyone's garden looks like in the spring is like, you know, bare.
Like, I mean, so the first time you see something, you see a fence that any rabbit could get through, and a deer could jump over. By the way,
okay.
And then you see kind of a small portion of soil, and this one's kind of interesting too because
they water it before they plant.
They water the soil before they put. Mother Bear puts a hole in the ground, and then waters it.
Okay.
And then a seedling goes in, and then Brother Bear pats it down. And in my experience, this is one of my critiques of the techniques here.
Okay.
Because if you're growing, you definitely need to water your seedlings in, and you want to make sure the root ball of the seedling before you even plant it is nice and moist, because it'll get hydrophobic if it's not moist. So okay. even if it's hydrophobic and dry, you put it in the ground and then water it, it probably will never absorb that water. But if you do it the way she's explaining it, in my experience, you would be making a big mud puddle and then you'd stick the root ball in, which works. But then if Brother Bear came in and started patting it, you'd start maybe making a pretty like muddy mess that would actually be compacted even.
What about a water wheel transplanter?
It's doing it simultaneously though.
And well,
it's
not they being, are watering the hole.
But there's no compaction. You're not pushing it in. You're just dropping the hole. Well, you can do it that way.
It is one way to do it.
Mm-hmm. But Brother Bear would get incredibly muddy compared to if you patted the soil in first and then watered afterwards.
Well, he's not doing anything else that day.
Yeah.
He's not going to play baseball with Freddy.
No, and no. You can see by the expression on his face that he's very thrilled about that.
Yeah. I like that the expressions on their faces are like, they look like kids who have to go gardening with their mom.
Right.
Like, exactly. they're not exaggerating the enthusiasm of the cubs. I do like when she points out that ice cream and honey come from plants.
Yeah. I do too, actually, because I think it's really important to recognize that, one, the honey with our pollinators is important.
Yeah.
You know?
And also they go into, what popcorn is, which I find a very interesting diversion. But we also see that...
Can I just touch on the popcorn thing
here? Oh, please do.
So I also noticed the pop... I don't even know what page it's on. But
oh, it's...
Anyway. I recently listened to another podcast. It's like a science podcast for kids. And they were talking all about popcorn.
Yeah.
And did you know that there are different varieties of popcorn for different purposes? So like there's one variety of popcorn just for caramel corn.
Aww.
I know.
And it's rounder. It produces a rounder pop, right?
Yeah.
So that makes sense. Yeah. With like the little brain shape bursts as opposed to the flower type
and
bursts.
And the popcorn they use like for movie popcorn that absorbs a lot of butter is bred specifically to have increased surface area.
I always wondered about the caramel corn, why it was so round.
Yeah.
This is what our land grant university system has given us.
If I opened up a bag of caramel corn and it was all like just sort of dripping off the, I'd send that back. This is America. Yeah. While they're going through all this actual factual sort of walking through the science, we do get to see a pig next to pictures of bacon and ham and sausage, leading us to understand that this is a Berenstain Bears universe in which the pigs have lost sentience and their place in society. This is definitely a world where they are eating other animals.
Is this an anomaly in this book? Because we're talking about kind of an anthropomorphized version of, they're all anthropomorphized, but
I don't know. You don't usually get in these books such a strong line between the animal and the food made from the animal. So you're not usually hit with that, like, oh, the Berenstain Bears are eating a friend. Like, it could be a friend, could have been a neighbor.
But I do think that it is important for readers, young readers, maybe who live in cities and don't necessarily know where their food comes from, to make that connection.
Oh yes, of course. No, right? From an educational standpoint, it is important for kids to understand that the bacon doesn't fall off trees.
So can I make another observation here?
You can make another observation.
So this actual factual bear strip at the bottom, really, I was really fixated on it throughout the whole book. Like the story, I don't know. It was like, fine. But I found myself nitpicking everything in this actual factual strip.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's not true. yeah, I don't know about that. And just the general cadence of the text was very much like this other book.
Which is this book?
The Reason for a Flower by Ruth Heller.
Okay.
Written before.
Oh.
Yeah, I did check.
Oh, no.
Over a decade before, right?
Like, yeah, in 1983. And then I think this one was 1990-something.
Yeah, 1994, 95? 1996.
There you go.
Good year.
But they both kind of have this quasi-rhyming cadence about factual things.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about plants.
Yeah.
So I was a little led to believe that maybe there was some inspiration.
It could be, or it could just be that, you know, creative minds thinking alike.
Yes.
Which one do you think is a better representation of how plants grow?
The reason for a flower. But I mean, it's very much like this is an educational
right
tech, you know, book.
This is making learning fun though. Look at actual factual.
Their clothes come
from plants. At one point, actual factual is holding an actual copy of this actual book.
That's awesome.
Nice. How's that even work? We don't know. Actual. It doesn't make any sense.
How often do they write poetry in books?
You should hold it open to this page.
Plants
make a gas called oxygen, the gas we use when we breathe in. Plants need a gas called CO2, which they get from me and you. We breathe out CO2. That's something we can think about as we are breathing in and out.
Well done.
It is. I mean, you can think about anything you want.
But you could be thinking about CO2.
But you could fixate on the breathing you're doing and short circuit your lungs are what? They are like the involuntary muscles. Like, what is it called? There's the muscles.
Ventilation?
No, there's the muscles you move because you want to move them. And then there's
your accessory muscles?
The muscles that, like, the heart and stuff. You don't have to think, like, the body makes them. Is that what it's called?
Involuntary muscles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you think about them, like, if you think about breathing, then you're suddenly like, now I'm thinking about breathing and now it's suddenly hard. I can feel myself doing it. Yeah. That's just weird.
Usually thinking about breathing actually is relaxing.
No. It's like there's a peanut strip. That's one of my favorite.
That's the whole premise for meditation.
One of my favorite Charlie Brown strips is where Linus panics because he's suddenly become aware of his tongue.
He's going to swallow it.
He's sitting on his floor with his tongue sticking out of his mouth and Lucy's like, what's wrong with you? And he's like, I've suddenly become aware of my tongue. I don't remember how it ends. I think she like hits him or something. But like, I want to talk about vermiculite because vermiculite gets mentioned in this book about a thousand times. I had never heard the word vermiculite used.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I've never heard vermiculite used in my life. I'd only ever heard it used in this book.
Wow.
A little backstory, if you're interested. I don't touch plants. I don't try to make them grow. So I wouldn't have a whole lot of cultural context for this. That's just like one of those things. Like off to the vermiculite store to get me more of that vermiculite I keep running out of. Like that's just not like my thing. But I ran into Aaron on the way to the grocery store today. And he kind of filled me in about it being some sort of volcanic rock.
Well, it's funny because I did a little research.
Oh, did you?
I was a little questioning it after I said that. And perlite, which is another substance that is used in potting soils pretty regularly, is the volcanic.
What's the vermiculite?
Vermiculite is a mineral. I don't remember the exact name of the mineral. We could look it up again.
Vermiculite.
But no, there's another name that the mineral that actually comes from. Vermiculite is when you heat it up.
Oh.
And it sort of puffs into these layers. It's really cool. So it almost looks like fool's gold a little bit.
Oh, yeah?
But it has these layers to it. And the reason you add it to potting soil is for its water holding capacity.
Oh, I see.
It is a hydrous phyllosilicate.
So I went home and I was like, hey, Alana, I ran into Aaron. He told me what vermiculite is. And she's like, yeah, it's in potting soil. And I was like, oh, I guess people know this. This is like one of those things that like people know.
It has a good water holding capacity. So when you get it wet, it absorbs sponge.
I guess
so you
that
don't
makes
have to water
sense.
Your yeah. seedlings as much.
So you would buy, it comes in potting soil.
Yes.
Well, that's a little bit of
but would you buy just vermiculite to put into just soil?
So my experience with vermiculite straight is
the good stuff, the hard stuff.
Just straight vermiculite is used for rooting. So if you take a cutting of something, you would root it in vermiculite or maybe a vermiculite sand mix.
And sometimes, like, you know, some farmers, because like when you're planting tomatoes in the greenhouse, you plant them, they take, you know, 8 weeks at least in the greenhouse before you plant them into the ground. Mm-hmm. In Minnesota, that means you're starting them in sometimes sub-zero mid-March. Weather in early March, mid-March. And so you don't want to have to heat a whole greenhouse full of tomato plant trays. And so you have like one tray that might have 500 tomato plants in it. And they kind of allude to that in the book too, that at some point they talk about here. Seedlings, you know,
when
seeds sprout, they're called seedlings. Small ones don't mind crowds. So tomatoes are like that. Like you would have like 500 in this small flat. And a lot, oftentimes farmers will use just straight vermiculite in those flats. Cause you're actually going to, within a few weeks, once they get their first true leaves, first leaves that come out of a seed that's growing are the cotyledons, which actually one of my favorite little things about cotyledons. So you can tell what family often the seedling is in, or the plant is in, mm-hmm. by its cotyledons, like broccoli plants, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts,
kale,
all those are in the brassica family, mm-hmm. and they have these little beautiful heart-shaped cotyledons. And so even those first leaves, they just have these little hearts on them, and they're super cute.
That's Aaron's favorite thing about cotyledons.
Super cute.
Well, my favorite thing about cotyledons is that the biodynamic movement started by Rudolf Steiner, which I won't get into.
Because it's a Baron St. Bear's podcast.
Yeah, exactly. But Steiner has this idea that kids, which I loved when our kids were young, is when they fall asleep, they sleep with their arms kind of spread out like this. Can't see it on a radio.
No, but he's holding his arms up like a sleeping child.
Yeah, and Steiner called that the cotyledon sleep. Cotyledon arms. And the idea is that like you're absorbing the earth's energy, the world's energy to grow.
What if your child doesn't sleep like that?
Then your child will not grow.
Your child will go into someone who does a podcast
about
children's books. I have learned more about vermiculite than I thought actually there was to know about vermiculite. Get the good stuff, uncut, pure vermiculite.
But
grow some cotyledons.
I would say that just get some potting soil.
I wonder why they focus on vermiculite, because I don't think that that's something that most, especially home gardeners,
mm-hmm.
I don't think that they're like, I need, like if you read this book as a novice home gardener, you'd be like, holy cow, I can't just go buy potting soil. Right. I got to buy potting soil. Now I got to find vermiculite. And I would guess that like an Ace Hardware doesn't just sell straight vermiculite.
Yeah, because like it shows like two shallow pots, one marked soil, one marked vermiculite.
Mm-hmm.
And they're wetting the soil and they're wetting the vermiculite.
And the soil's leaking all over the place, mm-hmm. and the vermiculite's holding strong.
They're demonstrating its water holding capacity by showing the puddle around the soil, mm-hmm. and that all the water is being absorbed.
But the truth is, any potting soil that you get is not going to be straight soil.
So it probably has some mixture of vermiculite.
Oh, I see. Because it says right here that you're supposed to buy potting soil as well. So are they doing pure vermiculite because they're growing a specific plant? Like,
I don't know. I think it's
maybe their research led them down the vermiculite trail.
Maybe they wanted one kind of technical word to kind of throw in there to have fun.
I'll ask Mike.
Yeah.
Do you remember your parents talking a lot about vermiculite when you were a kid? Like, was that a thing around the house?
I mean, the thing is, if you like, vermiculite's good for starting seeds, right? So if they're doing this tray where they're just starting a whole bunch of seeds and then you plant them, you pot them on.
Yeah.
Like this frame. After a while, seedlings need to be gently separated and given homes of their own. So if that happens before those little seedlings are too big, then the vermiculite would be just fine. It doesn't have any nutrient in it. No nutrition for the plants. So there's no compost. There's nothing for them to eat. It's just a growing medium.
Well, speaking of seeds, some are smaller than a dot. Some are as big as a coconut, and those are called coconuts. Those are the ones that are as big as a coconut. It's the coconut, which is the largest seed. And you can also, maple seeds,
make a mustache.
Or a rhino horn. Or
I'm surprised they didn't put helicopter.
Helicopter. I'm like sitting there going, it's the helicopter seed. That's the one thing I've ever seen of maple seed. It's helicopter seed.
Maybe it was too obvious.
Right. Book.
I like the mustache, though.
I do like the mustache. Brother looks very distinct. We know what Brother Bear is going to look very like dapper. Now when he grows the college mustache. Seeds get spread by animals and droppings, and a bird poops on Papa's hat. It's very funny. Good thing that all seeds don't take root, or we'd all be dead. That's not what it says, but that's kind of the implication as we see actually.
I thought it was kind of interesting how they went from, they made this jump from growing a garden, which is, you know, full of domesticated plants, right? Mm-hmm. Like the plants that we grow in a garden, like lettuce or carrots or whatever, have evolved alongside humans. So they would not ever really be found in the wild.
Right.
Right. But then they make this leap to now talking about Mother Nature's green thumb and like all the wild plants around, which I found kind of an interesting
twist. It's kind of humbling. It's that whole thing of like, you could die. Oh, I was going to say, you could die and your gardens could go to seed and just wither away. But not you guys specifically, any of us. The world, all humans could disappear and seeds will still get spread and plants will still grow mm-hmm. and spread. Maybe not the ones that we created, the ones that depend on us to grow them. But it's all kind of tied together. Like I kind of find it interesting going off what you said about like how they spring from like these very tended plants mm-hmm. that we have to buy and purchase food for to just wild plants growing. But they all sort of operate in similar ways. It's still the seed right. growing into a plant. I don't know. There's a connection there.
And how dependent we are as a species on these plants.
Right.
You know, I mean, they talk about the medicines that mm-hmm. come from plants and providing homes and food for other animals in the wild. And
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like this book isn't just about like, here's how to like grow. Cause it is, there's like I agree with you. There isn't a whole lot of how to in this book,
right.
but there's a lot of like teaching you to appreciate, not even appreciate, but like kind of respect like the world of plant life.
And just even recognizing that everything around yeah. us is derived from plant life.
How do you feel about that, Aaron?
Those primary producers.
I think it's great. I mean, I do think that it kind of takes you on a journey through. It's a nice book. Like, I think you can feel kind of good at the end of it. That,
that's
like,
so Minnesotan.
Yeah.
It's a nice book.
We haven't gotten to that point in the show yet. We don't need any opinions now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
we're still picking this thing apart. Right. Do you agree that deforestation is bad?
This.
Not this. Forest,
not this. The stumps.
Right. Sad fish with cans. Personal.
But I mean, it'd be interesting to know sort of the context of 19. I was thinking like 1996. Like, is this book, you know, so it's 2018. So it's like over 22 years ago that this was written. And I was trying to think about like.
What were the environmental issues
of the day? You know, where was climate change at? You know, I was just starting college in 96. It was my first year of college.
Clinton's America.
The economy's booming.
Yep. Spice Girls are at the top of the charts.
Spice Girls are rocking it.
Grunge is still it's on its final years.
Cobain still alive?
No, Cobain's long dead by this
long
point.
Dead, yeah.
Yep. Okay. Princess Diana still alive.
Really?
96? No. Yeah, 96? She didn't die on like 97, 98.
Really?
It was my senior year, yeah.
OJ hasn't done anything yet.
OJ no, totally did a lot of things.
Totally. OJ's that was
totally
way
done
before.
His deed.
Excuse me.
Allegedly.
That was like
but
early
I remember
90s.
Being in like soccer, because I played soccer in college, and I have a very specific memory of driving through the most gorgeous Upper Peninsula, Michigan fall forest roads of just pure gold leaves. Listening to the O.J. Simpson trial.
Well, yeah, I mean, the trial went on for a while, but I remember watching that Bronco on TV.
I remember watching it in like sixth grade.
I was in a sports bar with a friend for karaoke night, not for sports night, and the Bronco was on TV, and I believe it was the summer before I left for college.
When did you go to college?
Or whenever I went to college. I went to college in 94.
94. That's the power of O.J. Simpson, that we can be sitting here in 2018 talking about the Berenstain Bears and farming.
And it all comes back around. O.J. Simpson. If the glove
and
don't
the
fit, you must acquit.
But I did think about that. Like, is this my first thought, but I'm not sure it's the right thought. I mean, certainly the 60s, 70s, and 80s had some ecological consciousness growing in it. Mm-hmm. But it seems a little bit like 96 is still fairly early for a book like this.
Mm.
Or that maybe it was like early, like there's things like this happening in the 70s. Maybe we all forgot about it in the 80s. And then we were coming back to it in the 90s again.
I remember a lot of Earth Day celebrations in the 90s.
Yeah, that's
true. I remember like MTV was really trying to Thai, like a lot of like youth culture.
Kurt Loder, whatever his name is.
Kurt Loder was really big.
He's really interested.
Into Earth Day. That was my big memory. I wore my scraggly goatee and put on my hemp shirt. Took my hacky sack outside. And
I remember going to a music festival sometime in the 90s.
Oh,
and
yeah.
There was a reading of The Lorax by, who was the Sitting in the Tree, Luna or something?
I was hoping that you weren't going to say who wrote The Lorax. I was hoping you were like,
who was the chick who sat in the trees?
In Oregon?
No,
is this someone I should know?
I don't know. Maybe it's a West Coast thing. She like did this famous tree sit in Northern California.
Right now there is
Pacific Northwest.
There are people like screaming at their radios. Like,
I know.
It's so and so. I know
how
who
do
it
you
is.
Not know who this
the
is?
Woman who sat in the tree in the 90s.
She sacrificed a couple years of her life.
I'll tell you right now.
Sarah McLachlan?
Luna.
Luna. Yeah.
Julia Butterfly.
Julia Butterfly.
Julia Butterfly.
Is that her given name?
She was
in Oregon, wasn't she?
I don't remember. But
anyway,
she sat in a tree named Luna. Oh. Anyway, I remember listening to her read The Lorax.
And this is the 90s.
This is in the 90s.
Well, the 90s is also a Lilith festival.
Right.
It has anything to do with trees, but it had to do with women.
Women. Yeah.
You know,
maybe some
Mother
of them
Earth.
Named Julia Butterfly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's all tied together. We were pretty cool in the 90s. I saw Spice World in the theater. So, moving on, they go to Farmer Ben's produce and garden supply shop. They buy everything on their list, and now we are into some really basic.
These are some of my favorites, actually. The growing of the carrot.
The carrot, where they cut the root of the carrot off and stick it in some water with some pebbles at the bottom.
Is that what you do?
That I've never heard of that before.
I mean, the interesting thing about that is like what they're showing is that like a carrot is a root, right?
Yeah.
At its base, like it's you're eating a root, and so like if you cut it, it'll want to keep growing.
Right.
But I don't know that you would actually like. They kind of present it as it would be a house plant.
I know that's the thing. So they're talking about growing a garden, and then at the end they have a house full of.
Oh wait, we're gonna get there.
Oh,
we're gonna get there. We're gonna get there.
Spoiler alert.
The growing the half of a carrot and growing the potato in the yam or what, like suspended with the toothpicks, like that's like
totally have done that.
Yeah, that's like elementary school. Like
absolutely.
Look at what you can do, kids. You can affect the world in some way. Grow a potato. You can either grow a potato in a jar. Or you can stick wires into it and make a light bulb light up. Like that's
right.
Those are what you do with the potato. It's just it's really weird at the very end here because I don't believe that Brother and Sister Bear never did this. Like this, to me, every you can do it yourself book as a kid had these.
But how old are Brother and Sister Bear in this book?
A good question.
I mean, this
how
is like
they?
The appropriate age for them to learn about the potato growing.
I had done
thing,
it by this
trick.
Point as a kid.
Well,
I had done the potato trick.
What is their estimated age?
Yeah, are they twins? Is one of
them
older than
the
other? Is the brother older?
No, sister is very clearly younger.
Sister was born in the Berenstain Bears' new baby. Don't you remember the Berenstain Bears' new baby?
I do not. When was that out?
In 78, 79.
So there are, how many books are there with just Brother Bear?
Quite a few. He was called Small Bear then.
Oh, I do remember Small Bear.
And then Papa Bear was like, "You've gotten too big for your crib. Come out into the woods and we'll cut out some trees to build you a new bed all for you."
I remember that.
And Mama Bear's like pregnant, and when they come back, she's given birth to a baby. Because
that's a head spin.
Because that's what you did. Because they're bears.
Yeah.
Like at this point they were still pretty much just bears in clothes. And Papa's like, "Get out of here. Something's going to happen in this house.
We're going to build you this nice knotty pine furniture.
I can't be around for this to happen because that's just not what bears do." And then they come back and Mama's like sitting there with Sister Bear in her arms and she gets Brother's old crib. And that's when he becomes Brother.
Aww.
Nice.
So sweet.
Yes.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying that like it is like, I think Ruben was doing that, and granted, they went to a preschool called Farm School,
right?
But they did things like this.
I mean, it's fascinating.
But they also grew up like on a farm.
Yeah. They're like, wait a minute. I just went to school and they told me you could grow carrots.
I thought there's one where is it? Where they're talking about like how to start seeds.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that too. The pumpkin
you just like
seeds.
Put the seeds in water.
Pointed up in the soil.
No, it was.
Yeah, like
that
these.
One.
Like these sink three seeds, pointy end up halfway into the soil.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true. I mean, you might.
I've never done
them halfway.
That.
I always put them pointy end up.
Can you grow pumpkins in a pot in your house? Is that a thing?
You can start them in a pot in your house. You can start anything in a pot in your house.
Anything.
My goodness. The mind boggles.
I mean, you know, of these things shown here.
Right. There are, yeah.
You can, though, but I mean, you just wouldn't get like a very healthy plant necessarily long term, right. But you could definitely, I mean, in terms of starting seeds for a garden, many people will start their garden seeds in the house, just in the window or.
Yeah,
I guess it's funny because this is the point you guys were just talking about. You guys were getting to, and I was like, "Don't get ahead of me." Which is where, and I think this speaks to what Aaron was saying in the beginning, which is we don't see Mama's garden. You're right; we see the big edge of it. We see one row where they've poked some holes and planted some seeds. The only thing we see is the house filled with potted plants.
Right, and you would never have vegetables.
In the bathroom.
In that look like this in potted plants all over your house. Like, I mean, maybe that's not true. We had flats and flats of vegetables on our kitchen floor until they went out. But these look like potted house plants. Not... Mm-hmm.
These aren't plants that are getting ready to be put out in the garden, right. As far as I can tell. They're just plants that they taught their kids how to... cut a carrot in half and all of a sudden they've got 50 carrot
house plants. I mean, look at them. They're like,
well,
that's like a pothos right there.
We see a pothos. We see some vine plants.
Maybe some aloe. Maybe some, yeah.
Yeah.
All kinds of house plants. And Papa looks just like
Papa does
off.
Look kind of annoyed the whole time.
Papa's angry. This is a very similar plot line to the Berenstain Bears and the Dinosaurs, where Brother Bear gets obsessed with dinosaurs and there's dinosaur toys everywhere and Papa can't sit down. Now they fill the house with many plants. They're also watching a TV show with the scariest bear clown I've ever seen, drawn by
Stan or Jan.
Yeah, I didn't notice that. That is kind of scary.
but this is, to me, and then the final page is Papa disgruntled, sitting surrounded by all these plants they've grown. And it is a funny message. It's the same conversation I had when I did the Berenstain Bears and the Dinosaurs, which was, the message at the very end of the book is always, isn't this annoying? Like, isn't this hobby annoying? Because the last image we have is Papa Bear annoyed by what they've learned.
But why is that? Why is that the lasting impression? Because there's three bears here who all have smiles on their faces and are enjoying their hobby. And like one disgruntled Papa.
Because he's the one who's going to start yelling.
What's his problem?
I kind of liked, and this is kind of sweet, but for some reason I liked the last part of the other part of the story.
Actual Factual.
I just like that it says, how did Professor Actual Factual learn so much about Mother Nature's green thumb? Answer, by going on field trips and interviewing other experts.
Interviewing other experts. That's how I learn all about it.
I like that, they add that you too can be an expert. You just have to go on field trips.
Just go on field trips and interview other experts.
Know things.
I appreciated that line as well.
See, I would. Okay, this is me getting real for a second here. I don't know anything about plants. I don't like being in nature that much. I don't appreciate it that often. But like reading this book and then talking to you guys about it. Reminds me that, like, oh, right, it's not this unknowable thing. It's not, like, to me, it's just, like, it's so beyond what I'm familiar with that it just seems like this, you may as well be, like, I don't know, like, building a rocket to the moon. I'm just, like, that's intangible to me. So talking about it and breaking it down and understanding the language behind it, the culture behind it, is... makes it seem far more accessible to me and far less intimidating. Like, it's still probably never something I'm never going to do, but because it just requires so much time and investment. But it's a matter of being comfortable around it. And I think that that's reflected a lot in like the people who come visit you guys, who stop to look and be like, I want to talk about this because this is a weird thing in a neighborhood. Like it shouldn't be like, we shouldn't be so amazed at people actually growing food, mm-hmm. like, and growing plants. Like that should be like common, but it is so rare that like it inspires strangers to stop their bikes in the middle of the street mm-hmm. and be like, tell me about these plants you're growing. What is even happening here? And what's funny is we actually have neighbors right across the street who have like their own like agricultural system in their yard.
Where? Is that?
Yeah.
Right across the street from you.
Gesturing
in the wrong direction. I'm gesturing in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The difference, I think, partly is that it's fenced in, so you don't
get to I was just going to say that. I think that that's the thing, is like we can't see theirs, so it seems very personal. Like mm-hmm. it's their personal thing that they're doing.
Yeah.
Whereas with you guys taking the fence down, it seems like
very public. Very
you're sharing it with the neighborhood. Like, you may not be literally sharing it all with the neighborhood, but like it's meant to be appreciated by everyone who walks by. I'm not throwing any shade at the way they are handling their garden either.
No, like, not at all. And, you know, and next year we might do that too.
They have small children. We've talked about it. If our children were a couple years younger, it would be a different situation. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting sort of reality when we remember when we moved in. And there are these two, what the neighborhood thought were like gorgeous lilac bushes that overflowed in the springtime with lilacs. And we were like moved in. We're like, well, that's like the best sun spot we have in the yard. Those things got to go. They're overgrown.
They are taking up space.
And as soon as we cut them down, we got so much slack from random neighbors. Like, oh, that was like my favorite part of walking on the side of the street was the lilacs in the spring.
I can't believe you're taking those out.
And you're like, there were literally car parts in this yard as well.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But like, and then it was great because there were like a few folks that walked by and they're like, oh, you cut the lilacs down. And we're like, yeah, we want to grow a garden. They're like, oh, that makes perfect sense because like you can grow a lot of cool stuff besides lilacs.
There's a lot of space here
but so I think we like weathered that storm
and
showed folks like, hey, we can actually grow stuff and this is fun. We'll make it a cool yard. But it'll be interesting if we do decide to build a fence, what the neighborhood reaction to that will be.
Spite.
And I think it has made us think pretty clearly or more about like, do we want to build a fence that both lends privacy enough to us, but also allows people to actually enjoy the garden? Right. And I think that's where we'll.
You should drill a few holes in it.
Have
a little look see. Yeah, isn't it? That's disgusting.
We've talked about like making a privacy fence with shutters that you can open and close, and then you could just close them and be like, "Oh, Aaron's being a bratty old tired man who doesn't want to talk to anybody," and then it's open. It's like, "Oh, Aaron's happy."
I don't want shutters.
Or a slot where people can put a coin or two.
And then they get a vegetable.
And no, they just get.
And out pops a carrot.
That seems even more disturbing than people.
Or a tomato. Or a pint of raspberries.
Who's putting the carrot through? That's like a bell ding in your house and you like run outside and work a carrot through this barely large enough hole. Like stick it through. Catch it on the other side. Here it comes.
No, but I think I don't know
that's my impression of you, by the way.
Yeah,
that's very refreshing. Thank you.
But here comes the carrot. I think that I was getting from that is like you could have like a little like you put in a coin and something opens just enough that you get to see what's on the other side.
That's what I was originally going to go
for 10 seconds, just to whet the appetite, and then you got to put in another coin if you want to keep looking.
It's like those like binoculars you get it like.
I don't want my yard to be a peep show.
We could have a peep show part of the portion of the fence as well.
They put in a coin, a little like window opens up and you get to watch this like 15-second like film from like 1901 of like a woman like lifting up her like skirt. People are like, hot dog. Yes, I guess what I'm suggesting is you turn your house into a penny arcade. So that's the Berenstain Bears the Berenstain Bears grow it! ! Mother Nature has such underlined a green thumb first time do it book. Aaron and Melanie, what did you guys? What are your last impressions on Berenstain Bears Grow Up? Mother Nature has such a green thumb.
I thought it was lovely. you know, it's hard to figure out the order to read things in. But when you can get past that, I think it's a good book.
I think that I agree with the order. I do think that, like so many of their books, they're sort of they do a great job of setting a scene that's somewhat timeless and inviting, that you kind of, I've always like wanted to live in the Berenstain Bear world. And so I think like they do a really nice job of that, where you're like, oh, in this world, you get to plant beautiful things and you get to go to Farmer Ben's store and you get to learn about ecosystems and you get to grow plants in your bathtub. And it's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing to share.
So, I mean, from my perspective, I think that this is a, I like this book. I like this book a lot. I think it's a very simple introduction for kids, for little kids, especially to the concept of agriculture. Like, especially if you have kids who kind of grow up in a house and don't realize that growing something is a thing that a person can do. I think it's a good, like, introduction to that. And also, if your family has a garden in the back and the kids aren't really interested in it or don't really understand, like, what you're doing, like, it's a good way to be like, no, this is the thing. Like, you can, this isn't just a grown-up thing that grown-ups go out there and do. Like, anyone can figure out how to plant a seed and help it grow.
So I know earlier I was kind of throwing shade on this book in comparison to the earlier book, The Reason for a Flower. But in terms of appeal to children, I read this book with Ruben, at least part of it, and he sat through it and he enjoyed it, because there is this story, right, with familiar characters, with the actual factual how-to. Whereas this, A Reason for a Flower, doesn't have any of that. You know, it's just the, it's just the facts. And that's hard for kids.
It is hard for kids.
Like, engage with.
And I will say, I had not noticed until just now that Papa Bear is actually angry on the cover. He's angry about them growing.
He does not like all these plants happening.
It could just be that Brother Bear has a half-eaten watermelon, dug through watermelon on their living room carpet.
The subtitle to the subtitle is Mother Nature has is such a pain in the ass.
I'm going to have to bleep that out. I'm going to have to bleep that out on my show now. You just added extra work to my show.
You're not going to edit a single second of this conversation?
Speaking of my show, I'm going to have to draw it to a close. We are over time, and I have to get home. Guys, this is the latest I've ever recorded an episode of Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. It is
after, you are very welcome.
It's after 10 p.m. You guys should...
We have to get up, because, you know, those plants, they just, they start at the crack of dawn, and...
Any good gardeners up at 5 a.m. watering and
hoeing
and planting. We've got to put in our cover crop. We're pulling out some crops in this late August, early September, and we'll put in some cover crop to put the garden to bed.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
And I stopped paying attention a long time ago to what you were saying. I understand words coming out of your mouth. Guys, Aaron, Melanie, thank you so much for being on my show.
Thanks for having us.
This is great.
It was fun.
Yeah. If you're looking for this show, I am at berenstainbearcast.wordpress.com. You can find me on Twitter at bstainbearcast, or write to me at berenstainbearcast@gmail.com. Also, go to patreon.com/deepinbearcountry. You can throw a few dollars my way if you subscribe at different tiers. There are different perks. There's not a lot of perks, but there are perks. Ask me a question. Propose a series of children's books you'd like me to cover in a special episode if you donate enough money. All kinds of little things. Who knows, if enough people give me money, maybe I'll come up with some more ideas. You never know. Money equals creativity. I think that's how the world works, or something. I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say anymore. Guys, I already thanked you for being on the show, but this is what I always do, so thank you again.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
I always screw it up. I always thank the people, then I do my spiel, then I'm like, wait, I gotta end the show. So then I have to thank you again. And then I'm gonna thank my viewers for watching. No, my listeners for listening. And remind you all to tune in. Wait, that's how I end my other podcast. It's so late. I'm really tired. Okay. And for everyone else out there, I'll see you all next time. Deep in Bear Country.